I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's go aboard.
Thanks so much for being with us on a fine Friday, a Target Demo Friday to you. We appreciate you dropping on by. And as always, we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Well, Rocket can. We appreciate you spending some time with us on a Target Demo Friday. And as always, the DA Show is here to let you know we got you covered over the next 2 hours. Coming up an hour from now, a documentarian, a director of a documentary about the Philadelphia Eagles fan base, Wait Till Next Year, is finally available, and the Philadelphia Eagles still basking in the glow 3 years ago of a Super Bowl championship, at least the fans are, although this year's been rocky, no doubt, and Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz have certainly taken their fair share of criticism, but you can't take away that banner and those rings, that parade of those moments. So we'll talk to the director of that film coming up an hour from now. Also, on a Target Demo Friday, let us know where you are, how you're listening, and what you're doing. And we'll read through those coming up here on the show in a little over an hour from now. So stay tuned for that Target Demo Friday. But let's talk about the Ravens right now, because the season could be on the line on Sunday in a huge matchup against the Titans. This Ravens team has not looked like last year's Ravens team. And I think that there's a couple of reasons for that. But I think the biggest reason was that last year, Lamar Jackson's season was so overwhelming and caught so many people by surprise that the Ravens just blitzed through everybody in the final 14 weeks of the season. I mean, the final 3 months were basically just a romp for Baltimore. And everything really came very easily to Lamar Jackson, both running the football, throwing the football, breaking defenses wide open, creating highlight plays. Last year, it just felt like the world was Lamar Jackson's oyster and that he was having the type of season that Patrick Mahomes had the year earlier. This sensational breakout season by a young quarterback who is elevating his team to the next stratosphere at a very, very early stage, his first full season as a starter. Now, for the Chiefs and Mahomes, 2 years ago, that meant a number one seed hosting the AFC Championship game, ultimately losing to the Patriots in overtime, just one step short of the Super Bowl. For the Ravens, though, it came crashing to a halt. They could not solve the riddle of the Titans' defense in the divisional round. And ultimately, they were one and done. So this year, they come into the season with, you'd have to imagine, a chip on their shoulder to finish what they started last year. And yet, while this Ravens team is 6-3, it has absolutely felt as though they are a far cry from the dominance of last season. And a lot of that has to do with the lack of punch offensively. They're able to run the football, but last year they were able to dominate running the football. Lamar Jackson has some of those wild, eye-popping plays, but last year his signature was every week, multiple eye-popping plays. They put up points this year, but not against the best teams they've played. And when they've gotten a big lead, like against the Philadelphia Eagles, they've not been able to ice it, allowing Philadelphia to crawl back into that game. I look at the Ravens this year, and I look at a team that might be reeling a little bit because it's not like it felt last year. And that maybe they came into this year assuming it would feel like last year. This year's Ravens team is 6-3, but look at their wins versus their losses. Their wins, the Browns, the Texans, the Bengals, the Eagles, Washington, and the Colts. Indianapolis and Cleveland, their two best wins of the season. But the Colts have often felt like they're a fringe playoff team. And the Browns in week one were very obviously still finding their way. They've settled down now. But I think that for the Ravens, when they play the Browns again in Cleveland in December, it'll feel like a much different game than them blowing them out in week number one. Their losses are arguably to the three best teams on their schedule. The Chiefs, the Steelers, and the Patriots last week. And New England is not one of the best teams of the AFC, but I say that it's one of the best teams on their schedule because Harbaugh and Belichick have battled for so long, for so many years, have so many historic bouts, that they know each other inside and out. So if there was a team that was going to be able to understand the tendencies of the Ravens, if there was going to be a coach that understood the tendencies of the other head coach, John Harbaugh. It was definitely the Patriots. It was definitely Belichick on a rainy, windswept night in Foxborough last week. The three biggest challenges for the Ravens this year, they failed. And so this game at home against the Titans is a crucial one. The division's lost. You're not chasing down the Steelers right now. You're three games back of the Steelers heading into week 11. That's just too much ground to make up. But what you need to do is not slip out of the playoff race. And your next couple of weeks are three, or at least three out of the next 4 weeks, playoff caliber opponents. This one on Sunday against the Titans. You're at Pittsburgh, short week on Thanksgiving night. You get a breather against the Cowboys, but then you're in Cleveland to take on the Browns. I think the Ravens need to at least win one of these three games. That's not a high bar to set, but I think they've got to win one of these three games. Because if they take two losses out of the three, it puts them at five losses. And they could sweep the rest of their games, Cowboys, Jaguars, Giants, Bengals. That would put you at 11-5. But if you lose all three of these games, and beating Pittsburgh on the road Thanksgiving night in a short week, going to Cleveland and winning, if you lose all three of these games, you're at 10-6, no better at the end of the season. And that probably gets you to the playoffs, probably. But you don't want to have a 9-7 because one of those last games at Cincinnati, home to the Giants who are playing better football, you don't want one of those to jump up and bite you. At the 9-7, you're out of the playoffs. I think the Ravens really have a very delicate situation now. They've lost two of their last three, and it's a short week in Pittsburgh on Thursday night next week. If they lose on Sunday, they're on the verge of losing four of their last five. And then what would you say about the Ravens? They might make the playoffs, but you wouldn't have much belief they could do anything in the playoffs. So I do believe that this game against the Titans is a crucial matchup, a huge matchup. and a really big game for them to save the season. The season's not necessarily on the line as though if they lose on Sunday, they can't make the playoffs, because they can. But if they lose to another good team on their schedule, and they're staring a short week in Pittsburgh in the face, this Ravens team would feel like a hollow version of last year, a very hollow version going into the playoff run or the playoffs themselves. Mraz, what do you think? On Sunday against the Titans team that beat them up last year in the divisional round, is the Ravens season on the line?
I think it's completely on the line. And you rattled off all those easier, quote-unquote, easier games. What would their confidence be like versus teams like the Bengals and Giants down the stretch if they had fumbled around all of that? And off Thanksgiving, they don't even get that extended breather versus a bad Cowboy team, because that'll be on a Thursday night with all the lights shining on them as well the week after Thanksgiving. The thing that's odd about this week, though, is they're kind of facing a team mirroring their situation a little bit and has to not be feeling confident, because I know the Titans aren't as sexy a team to talk about as the Ravens, but, I mean, heck, the Titans haven't played the best football of late either. Losing to the Colts, losing to the Bengals, losing to the Steelers, three of their last 4 weeks, they've really fumbled away what felt like it was going to be a very promising year, and they are the team that was in the AFC title game last year. So I think this game feels like a playoff game for both teams. The loser is going to feel real shaky about the ground they stand on for the wild card. And, yeah, we had higher expectations for the Ravens, but the Titans were right there in an AFC title game last year. And either way, it's going to feel like a sinking ship for the loser of this game coming out of it.
Loser goes to 6-4. The Titans, as you mentioned, have had a really rough last month and a half. They've lost three of their last four. They lost to the Colts, the Bengals, and the Steelers. And their two wins against the Bears, a brutal Bears team right now, and overtime against the Texans, a brutal Texans team. So the Titans, you're right, need this as much as the Ravens do right now. And it would also feel as though if the Titans win this game, that there's the blueprint. That a team that can play defense or run the football or grind you down would have the type of blueprint to consistently shut down the Ravens. And I know that the Titans defense isn't what it was last year. I know that right now this Titans team is not maybe as buttoned up as it was last season. They're taking on a little bit of water. But the style of play that the Titans are capable of playing, you know, they shut down teams last year by running the football and pounding and punishing Derrick Henry and company. If they can do that by slowing down the game again on Sunday and taking the air out of the football for Lamar Jackson and kind of make Lamar Jackson look confused or frustrated again like he has so many times this season, does it also make you feel like if the Ravens got to the playoffs, those caliber of teams, they just wouldn't be able to beat, and they'd be another one and done this season?
There's no doubt about it, because the blueprint, as you said, would be out there for how to play Lamar Jackson. And they already have those questions in the postseason because of their failures now two straight years, although I don't really count 2 years ago. But I don't know how you could be confident at all if you were anybody in that Raven locker room that suddenly the light switch would be turned on versus any of these teams that you've lost to again in the postseason. I don't think this would be a case of, oh, we've seen them, we could take their best shot, we'll be back at it. I think there have to be serious doubts in the mind of anybody in the Raven uniform.
So that one's coming up on Sunday, and I'll have more of a preview of it coming up on Sunday Morning Football. Catch me every single week on Sunday mornings, 10 until noon Eastern time. 10 until noon Eastern time, 7 until 9 Pacific. Every Sunday morning, we break down what happened in college football on a Saturday and then preview the action on Sunday, NFL Week 11. And this week, Sunday Morning Football welcomes on two-time Super Bowl championship head coach Tom Flores. Flores won two Super Bowls as head coach of the Raiders back in 1980 and 1983. He's also a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the rare coach that has won two Super Bowls and not in Canton. He's a finalist. He's now in his early 80s. He's been waiting for this for a long time. So I'm looking forward to talking to Tom Flores coming up as part of Sunday Morning Football coming up this weekend. And Mraz, this was the subject of the PGP this week. On Side B, you interviewed Connor Green, one of the young diaper D aliens here in the farm system of the DA show, who's actually in today as Pete the Body Bilotti has been out this week on maternity leave. And Connor is now the new producer of Sunday Morning Football. There was a lot of pressure on him to deliver a guest in the first week that he takes over, as the old producer, Ryan Hickey, gets promoted to a weekday slot. He's now going to be producing the Zach Gelb Extravaganza. So in the first week, Connor lands a Hall of Fame finalist head coach in Tom Flores, as we'll talk about Raiders and Chiefs with him the Sunday night game. How would you grade out Connor's first get?
I think it's an A. You got a two-time Super Bowl winning head coach that you don't hear from often. You know, it's not like you turn on CBS Sports Radio or any of these radio networks and you hear Tom Flores a lot. That is a great job by Connor. I would tell you, if DA had asked me to book Tom Flores, I probably wouldn't know where to begin, because the man probably doesn't even have a Twitter, over 80 years old. So that is an incredible job by Connor Green. And I do have to say, now that I think about it a little more, Connor Green basically wanted to remind me, to remind you guys, hey, we're going to have Tom Flores on Sunday Morning Football, where he could have just texted you that, or texted whoever that, and he texted me that. And now the more I think about it, the more I think that was a flex job by him to kind of, hey, hat tip, this is who I have. And I didn't really have to remind you that that's who you have on Sunday Morning Football this week. So, interesting flex by Connor. But I do think it's an A, and it's a great job right out of the gate.
I think it's definitely a double into the gap, and then on second base, he's staring at you on the pitcher's mound.
Yeah.
He is looking at you and saying, remember who I am.
I think that's accurate. First one, too, D.A., you build up to a Tom Flores. I often have said, you never want to set the bar too high for yourself. Shoot for mediocrity, because then when you do something really great, people will credit you. If you come out the gate smoking with a Tom Flores, and you're back with a Steve Berline in week two, now you've set the bar too low. And we love Steve, but you know what I mean.
By the way, we had Rich Gannon on the show earlier in the week from the NFL on CBS, and I was talking to him about Trevor Lawrence and whether Lawrence should be a little leery about going to the Jets. And this is a topic of conversation we've had all season long. And Rich Gannon said, yeah, basically, you don't know if the head coach is going to come back. And the GM, Joe Douglas, you know, how many coaches is he going to be allowed to hire? So there might be some pause if you're Trevor Lawrence. But Rich Gannon has taken a lot of heat on social media over this take. And people say, well, Joe Douglas didn't even hire Adam Gase, and Gase is definitely going to be fired. And Joe Douglas is definitely going to be allowed to hire a coach or two because he didn't hire Gase. Do you think that Gannon deserved criticism for that take?
A little bit, but I'm going to defend him here. Now, I think it's so obvious that Adam Gase is getting fired, but if you're Rich Gannon and you're somebody who talks to these teams weekly upon doing games, all you've been fed from the ownership of the Jets is, we like Adam Gase. It's been a defense of Adam Gase all year long, so while we may assume because they're so bad that he's getting fired, and it's probably likely, I can't blame a guy talking to teams for having a take.
And he has the Jets game this week, which means he will personally talk to Adam Gase this week. So to go on national network radio and say he'll be fired, I think is a little uncouth. The guy is not fired yet.
The guy is not fired. And look, if we had a writer on, maybe who could, you know, cover the team and not exactly an analyst who is engulfed with talking to these teams, maybe they would have a different take. But you gotta understand, for Rich Gannon can't approach this like Adam Gase is fired. If he's talking to him and the whole ownership group is telling you that he won't be fired, he's got to take that as if, and then that has to be his takes based off. So, yeah, I think that it's, if I had to guess, Adam Gase is probably getting fired, so that is irrelevant. But for Rich Gannon to have that take, I can't crush him for that, no.
I can't either, and I think people were kind of parsing his words on Joe Douglas being able to hire a new coach. Likely Joe Douglas is around, but who knows? Maybe they hire a new coach and a new GM and totally blow it up. Don't you think that's on the table as well?
Of course it is, and for those not close to the situation, basically it was McCagnan run out of town as the general manager by Adam Gase, and it was well thought that Joe Douglas was kind of Adam Gase's hand-picked general manager for him, kind of a reverse of what usually happens where the GM picks the coach. It kind of felt like the coach was picking the GM. So I think to assume that Joe Douglas is there and he's going to pick a new head coach when he's kind of there because Adam Gase wanted him, or at least that was the belief, I think is totally outlandish too.
I do too. So I thought the criticism of Gannon was a little overboard here, because it's I think he's on the right track. I think if you're Trevor Lawrence, you do want assurances within that Jets organization of who's going to be your coach, the type of coach you're going to have, who's going to be the GM, how much lateral, you know, control that he will have, unilateral control over building a roster. You don't want friction to the top. You don't want a coach that doesn't like the GM or vice versa. You want a streamlined operation. And so I think Gannon's on the right track here, that if you're Lawrence and you have the option to go back to Clemson, you want all of those assurances in place before you, you know, you sign up for being the franchise guy for the Jets. When we come back, now speaking of Connor Green, when he's in, we like to run a play for him, Canadian bacon style. Last night, if you didn't catch it because you were watching Seahawks Cardinals, there was a great college football ending. Connor will give it to us next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save. And play is stopped.
We crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
Why do you have to be mad? It's only hockey. He's a good guy.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home, that's hard work. Get a quote, geico.com, that's easy. Now, Connor Green has been filling in doing a Canadian bacon for the Mac, Mid-American Bacon. Last week, or earlier this week, rather, we had him do a green bacon, all green-themed items. So it has nothing to do with hockey, but we just love that open so much that we just keep playing it anyway. So now Connor has a Thursday Night in Football segment here on the DA Show. Last night, we had, of course, Seahawks and Cardinals, and then also we had the green wave, the Connor Green wave against Tulsa, and a wild high school football story. So, Connor, take it away.
All right, DA. So, last night, the Cardinals went to Seattle attempting to sweep the season series with the Seahawks, but Russell Wilson and company would not be denied.
First down and 10 from the 11. Russ has time. Got a man in the back of the end zone. Reaching up, feet down. It is Lockett. Touchdown, Seahawks. Tyler Lockett dragging the toenails once again. Back corner of the end zone and a perfect teardrop pass from Russell Wilson.
Seahawks radio there on the call. So this was a huge win for the Seahawks. But this game was an even bigger win for short men all across the world. Short men have been discriminated against for far too long. They get told you can't be an NFL quarterback, you're not tall enough. Women say, I don't really date short men, sorry. Doug Flutie took the Bills to the playoffs in 1999 and got benched simply because they said he was too short. Well, last night, look what happened. Russell Wilson, I think, is about 5'7", and Kyler Murray, I believe, is maybe around 5'2". That might not be completely accurate, but it's pretty close. Both are NFL superstars, both are fun to watch, and both have proved the haters of the short men wrong. Short men now, DA, will no longer be silent. Short is the new tall. And maybe, maybe one day I can look at my hypothetical son and say, Junior, maybe you too will be an NFL quarterback.
Short is the new tall. That's a good line. Okay, in college, what a game we had last night.
We had the Tulane Green Wave against Tulsa Golden Hurricanes. And last week we talked about how Tulane was on fire. They took down Army. They took down the entire U.S. Army, one Green Wave.
Right.
But last night, Greens across America were all let down.
Brad awaits the snap, has the snap, and drops back the pass. Big rush on, throws over the middle. It's intercepted by Zaven Collins. Collins left side, 40 to the 50, to the 45, to the 40. He may take it all the way. 20, 15, 10, 5. That's a touchdown for Tulsa, and that's a victory. 30 for Tulsa. Are you kidding me? It's a 95-yard return by Zaven Collins. And what can't he do? Holy smokes.
Call courtesy of Big Country 99.5
yeah!
in Tulsa.
All right.
Tulane blew a 14-point fourth quarter lead, losing 30-24 there in double overtime. They had a chance to upset a top 25 team, but let it slip away. The Green Wave lost to the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. And I thought last week a Green Wave was strong enough to withstand almost anything, but apparently not a Golden Hurricane, whatever that might be. So all the Greens are just incredibly upset today. I just got off the phone with my good friend CeeLo Green. He couldn't believe it. It's just, it's not a great day for the Greens. It's a great day for short men, but an awful day for the Greens. I'm not happy. CeeLo Green's not happy. Draymond Green is furious. AJ Green is beside himself. Not a good day for the Greens, but a massive comeback win for Tulsa. Now their fourth straight win in a game where they trailed by 14 or more points.
So let me give you the rundown of what this, how this went down, because I'm sure a lot of people didn't watch it as they were watching Seahawks and Cardinals. Last night, as Connor just mentioned, there's a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, okay? So it's 14-0 Tulane into the fourth. 9 minutes to play, Tulsa scores, makes it 14-7. They get the ball back. With 3 minutes to play, they tied up 14-14. Okay, so there's less than 3 minutes to play. They just got to get a stop here, play to overtime. Tulane goes down the field and scores on a short field to get a 21-14 lead. Then, with no seconds on the clock, Tulsa has to throw up a Hail Mary from 40 yards out, final play to tie it up, and they get it to force overtime. And then in double overtime, as Tulane is trying to drive for the opening score, it's a pick six the other way, 96 yards, and that's how Tulsa knocks off Tulane. A crazy college football game last night. Okay, and finally, what a wild story out of the high school football world, Connor.
Yeah, the toughest thing I've ever had to do in my life, DA, was go 2 hours without internet connection in my apartment. It was an absolute grind, and I barely made it out in one piece. But listen to this story. A high school football coach in Maryland suffered a heart attack during a game last Saturday, but continued coaching until the end of the game.
Wow.
Daryl Hayes, a 30-year head coach at St. John's Catholic Prep, thought he just had a bit of indigestion. His players and assistant coaches didn't know anything was wrong, and according to the report, they all just noticed he seemed a little bit calmer than usual. After the game, he went to the hospital, and it was confirmed he had suffered a heart attack during the game. So he's now home, he's doing well, he had treatment, and he's doing fine. But this is one of the most incredible feats in the history of football. This may be one of the toughest men who have ever lived. When I stub my toe, I walk with a limp for like an entire week. Daryl Hayes has a heart attack and finishes coaching the game. Some people are just built a little differently. And that, guys, is your Canadian American football bacon.
This story is wild. 2 years ago, this coach had bypass surgery, and so he would take nitroglycerin pills, which increases blood flow. His wife said, thank goodness he didn't take the medicine, because it would have opened up all the vessels really wide, which increases blood flow. And if that would have happened during this heart attack, it increases the chances there could have been a blood clot that traveled up to his brain. So she's happy that he didn't know he was having a heart attack. And he didn't know. He just thought it was indigestion, so he didn't take the nitroglycerin pills. I mean, this reminds me of when Mraz had heartburn. It was the first time he'd ever suffered from heartburn. And so to cure the heartburn, he ate a Pop-Tart. He said, this is what my body needs. Emergency Pop-Tart. You'd eaten Chinese food that night. I don't know why I know all these biographical nuances of your life. But you had eaten Chinese food that night. You'd had a little bit too much sodium, apparently. Little acid reflux, little heartburn happens. And you're like,
right.
I've never tasted this. I've never felt this way. It must mean I'm still hungry, which is such a wild interpretation of heartburn. Heartburn usually is that kind of like acidic burp that you have. You're like, oh, yeah. I ate something that's coming up. It's not digesting correctly. You said, clearly my body's telling me I haven't eaten enough. Not that it'll be a hunger pang. Instead, it's, this must mean as I'm burping up acid, I'm not eating enough Chinese food. And so you quickly heated up a Pop-Tart and threw down a strawberry Pop-Tart to quench the heartburn.
I do love kielbasa.
I mean, just, you have most of the facts straight, but just to clear up a little bit, remember, Chinese food is one of those foods where after you eat it, you're like hungry half an hour later. And this was a pain I had never felt before. And it was this burning pain that the closest I could resemble it to was when I was actually starving, even though that's not the feeling I had. And on the overnights, I used to pack my regular snacks and my emergency snacks. And Pop-Tarts, I always viewed as a very versatile, could be a meal, could be a snack, because people have them for breakfast. So I had emergency Pop-Tarts because I laid down going, I'm way too hungry after this. And the sugar imploded with the heartburn and made for a much worse night. And that was my first bout with indigestion, heartburn, whatever. Now I learned Pop-Tarts can't cure it. It's not a hunger pang.
Everybody is fat.
So you're telling me that after eating copious amounts of sodium enriched and fried Chinese food in all types of rich sauces and sugar-based sauces, you then crushed a strawberry Pop-Tart and it didn't help the acid reflux. It actually created more indigestion.
Again, I wasn't a doctor. I didn't know it was acid reflux or indigestion. I thought I was just hungry. So, no, it did not help. It caused a real problem, and there are pictures somewhere out there of me laying on the floor in pain going, oh my goodness, I think I might die.
I'm not a doctor here. What do you expect me to do?
Well,
I'm burping up acid. You think I'm not? My only solution could be eating my emergency Pop-Tarts, which is also hysterical because if you are lost in the wilderness, what are your emergency items? Maybe a Swiss Army knife, maybe a canteen worth of water, maybe like a heat packet. Meraz's is Pop-Tarts. That was my emergency. And also in New York City, you might carry mace on you. You might have something, you know, to make sure you stay safe. Meraz walking through New York City is like, I'm going to stay safe with my Pop-Tarts. That's my emergency backup situation here.
Well, hold on. It also should be noted, it was Peter Schwartz and Kenny Brock with me, and it was Peter Schwartz that stepped up and said, I have Chinese food all the time. You're probably just still hungry. This is before I really got the full feel of who Peter Schwartz was, so I trusted him as a father at the time to talk me through that I really needed a snack. And it was Kenny Brock basically eating a whole bunch of tobacco going, yeah, you should absolutely do that. You should absolutely do that. Way before I knew that he was just out to screw with me. So these are the people I had with me who had my back on that. And then DA walked in basically to me like I'm George Costanza with my pants down on the floor going, so you want to be my latex salesman.
So what emergency did you think could could come up at work or on your way from Long Island to New York that you would need an emergency snack for? What were you afraid of happening that you have to pull the ripcord on your Pop-Tart emergency?
It's called Dunlap disease. when the gut Dunlaps over the belt.
This might shock you, Bogus, but I was about 40 pounds heavier than I am now on the overnights because I used to eat at like 10, 11 o'clock. I would always order food in the city, and I guess my emergency was my night would be too hectic with whatever was going on. I wouldn't have time to get food or a place would have closed. And just, I would need that to get by. Or on my way home, I would need to eat something to keep me awake because we were up all night. So there was plenty of cases for emergencies, and Pop-Tarts would either be a snack or a meal. I thought they were the best item on the go to carry.
And there is the part of the lore of the DA show, the emergency Pop-Tart story.
And DA, I mean, like, literally anything is a reason to eat. I'm hungry. My insides are on fire. It's morning. It's night. I'm awake. I'm asleep. The Giants won. The Giants lost. It's Thanksgiving. It's Christmas. It's a Tuesday. Let me eat.
I mean, I don't know. It could have been too late at night. It could have been too early in the morning. I could have been too hungry. I might not have been hungry enough.
I'm tired. I'm too awake.
I don't know. I might need something to help me go to sleep on the train. I don't know. I might need something to help me keep awake on the train. I'm not sure. I just need something to eat.
I might have to drive the train. So let me have some nuts just in case.
AB has our headlines. Mr. Bogues, what do we have?
Guys, they had lost two straight and three of four, and then the Seahawks had likely their best all-around effort of the season on Thursday Night Football. The defense frustrated Kyler Murray all night, with Carlos Dunlap sacking him on the Cardinals' final play with 34 seconds left. The offense got two touchdown passes from Russell Wilson and 165 rushing yards with Carlos Hyde back in the lineup. Here's Pete Carroll.
I know that you've been hearing me talk about it, but we're getting well here soon, and we're going to get better, and we're going to be stronger, and we're going to be better for it, and we have a chance to really put together a good opportunity here for us by playing good ball week in, week out.
For now, the Seahawks are atop the NFC West at 7-3, pending the Rams game on Monday night, but there is bad news in Seattle. Tight end Greg Olsen tore the plantar fascia in his left foot. Carroll was asked if Olsen is done for the season.
I don't know that yet. There's been some marvelous returns for guys who do that rupture their fascia that would blow you away. Right now, he's in really a lot of discomfort and all that. But, we'll see what happens.
The Cardinals dropped to 6-4. Murray kept under wraps just 15 rushing yards. DeAndre Hopkins just 5 catches for 51 yards. And Arizona committed 10 penalties for 115 yards. Now, in primetime on Sunday, we have the Raiders hosting the Chiefs. As you've probably heard by now, Vegas practicing all week without 10 defensive regulars because of COVID positives and contact tracing. Defensive coordinator Paul Gunther's got some issues.
I don't know how we can beat these guys with a full lineup of practice, let alone 3/4 of your lineup not here all week.
Now, those close contacts should be able to play on Sunday night. With Klay Thompson officially done for the season with a torn right Achilles, the Warriors reportedly on the verge of trading for Kelly Oubre Jr. He's currently in OKC as part of Chris Paul's trade to Phoenix. Gordon Hayward's on his way to free agency after declining his $34 million option with the Celtics. Hayward could end up re-signing there. Only the Hawks and Knicks have the cap space to sign him outright. Otherwise, a sign and trade is needed. And you may remember that Bucks-Kings trade involving Bogdan Bogdanović. It died this week because Sacramento might not have had Bogdan's permission to pull off the sign and trade. He's now expected to explore restricted free agency this weekend. And since the deal would have been a sign and trade, it might be tampering since free agent negotiations aren't allowed until 6 Eastern today. So the league has reportedly opened an investigation into the matter. And MLB set start times for its opening day national TV broadcast yesterday. You've got Yankees, Blue Jays at 1 Eastern, Dodgers, Rockies at 4, Mets, Nats at 7, Astros, A's at 10. All of that is on Thursday, April 1st. Your first Sunday night game is White Sox at Angels. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. When we come back, it's David versus Goliath. Super Dave has his college football picks. He went 3-0 last week. Stick around for his picks next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's a spread. It's a line. It's Super Dave.
Well, I'm just never going to pass up an opportunity to chant, "Let's go, P." Mississippi is just the pinnacle of college football right now with Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach and Deion Sanders.
With your weekly college football picks.
I think about it because obviously on sale means you're getting a bargain, but I think I'd buy a racehorse first.
Thank you, Super Dave.
It's an Ask the Pros day as well, so think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Don't look now, but Super Dave's only 2 games behind Mraz as he went 3-0 last week with his college football picks. Super Dave, you feeling good? You starting to get that momentum building late in the season like last year?
I like the idea of putting pressure on Mraz. You never know what random food item he might have to pull out and make a bad decision using.
We start with one of my tasty top 5 games, Cincinnati and UCF. Cincinnati is 7-0. They're a 5.5-point favorite on the road at UCF. This is usually a very good American matchup, and you're leaning Bearcats, ranked in the top 10.
I mean, what can you say about Luke Fickell? 11-2, 11-3, 7-0 this year, no non-conference this year. It feels to me like if Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State lose, Cincinnati should be very, very seriously considered
for the playoff. Now, they have to run the table. UCF is a good football team, but I think they're a good group of five team, whereas I think Cincinnati is just a really, really good team. I don't know if you caught it yet this morning, DA. Pat Forty in Sports Illustrated has a terrific story out about Desmond Ridder, the quarterback for Cincinnati, about how he got his scholarship offer from the Bearcats while in a porta potty at Churchill Downs.
I did not see that, but I have to check that out. Forty is an excellent college football columnist.
That's our type of guy right there. And you've seen the Bearcats beat bowl teams, SMU, Memphis, Houston, and quite frankly, blow them out. Whereas UCF looks like a good, solid, decent team, but they lost to Tulsa and they lost to Memphis. UCF is one-dimensional. They are outstanding on offense, maybe the best in the country on offense. But Cincinnati has played teams like that before, and they're just not giving up points. They've only given up 20 points once this year. It came in their season opener. The defense is sensational. Ridder and the offense have really come on lately. And, yes, UCF has a very nice program. I just think at this point, Cincinnati should be talked about with the Clemsons and the Alabamas, and UCF should be talked about with other good teams like Marshall and Coastal Carolina and Boise State.
Super Dave has the Bearcats laying 5.5. I did not know this. Is this true that the SEC on CBS top crew, Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, will not be calling an SEC game for the second week in a row? Last week, bump for the Masters and also all of those cancellations. This week, they're really at San Diego State at Nevada, San Diego State laying 1.5?
How couldn't they be? When you have an opportunity to go to Reno this time of year, yeah, that's actually true. Nessler and Danielson are at Nevada and San Diego State. That's what happens when you're CBS and you've got SEC rights, but that's all mucked up, and the only other rights you really have are Mountain West. So
that is bizarre. Wow, because there is enough CBS, there's enough SEC games that the CBS crew has chances to do a game. I wonder why they punted on that.
I don't know, but I do know Nevada is 4-0, and Jay Norvell does a really nice job, but that 4-0 has come against teams that are combined 1-13, whereas San Diego State has played squads that are, or I should say, San Diego State has played okay, kind of good teams, not great teams. They ripped Wyoming Hawaii last week. But San Diego State's next group of games, this starts for Nevada, a group of much, much more difficult opponents. In the preseason, San Diego State was supposed to be better than Nevada, and I think that's what we'll see in this game. They're top 10 in the country in time of possession, really, really good on defense, and Nevada just has to prove themselves. I'm not saying Nevada is bad. In fact, I think they're actually pretty good, but they've played a bunch of garbage. Now they're stepping up in competition. They're playing a team that's supposed to be better than them. And hey, when you have a chance to bet on Brady Hoke, shouldn't you take that?
The SEC on CBS was supposed to do Lane Kiffin against Jimbo Fisher, the Ole Miss A&M game. That was postponed, and so they have decided, instead of going with another SEC game, to do San Diego State and Nevada. And the final pick from our guest picker, Super Dave, of the college football side of things, Georgia and Mississippi State. CBS said no thanks to this. What took so long for the Bulldogs? They are favored by 25. You like Georgia in a rout.
Georgia's the best two-loss team in the country, and while Kirby Smart has done a tremendous job resuscitating that program, or maybe not resuscitating, but taking them from a 8-9 win program to a national title contender, I don't get the deal with Stetson Bennett. He wasn't very good against Alabama. He's a great story. They kept running him out there, and then they got shellacked by Florida. They've got JT Daniels, who when he was at USC was one of the top recruits in the country, and finally they're handing him the reins. Georgia is elite defensively, maybe the best defensive team in the country, but they have offensive problems. They've got a quarterback sitting on the bench who is a prize prospect. You got to let them go. Meanwhile, Mississippi State, this is a disaster. Mike Leach started the year with that great win, 44-34 over LSU, and since then they've scored 47 points in five games. I mean, their wins are Vanderbilt and LSU. It's possible Vandy, LSU, Mississippi State are the three worst teams in the conference. They were postponed last week, Mississippi State, because of their own COVID issues. I just can't see how in the world they're going to score. They're last in the country, 21 yards a game, running the ball, and Georgia's defense is really good. If Georgia can put up points, they're going to win, and you would think JT Daniels wants to show off his arm and prove that he's the starter. It feels to me like it's a 35-3 type game. Last time these teams played, it was 31-3. That would cover.
Super Dave has his pick. Cincinnati laying 5.5. Georgia laying 25. And San Diego State laying 1.5. Thank you, Super Dave.
Thanks, D.A.
It's a bird. It's a plane.
Super Dave.
He went 3-0 in his college football picks last week. 3-0. What an interesting decision by CBS not to do another SEC game. There isn't a great slate of action this weekend. Florida Vandy, LSU Arkansas, Kentucky Alabama, Tennessee Auburn, Mississippi State Georgia, Mizzou South Carolina. But they chose the Mountain West. Hey now, Brad Nessler in Reno.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.